I'm Gab. He's Jules, back from holiday. Grey skies over West London. Very much so. I think the way Chelsea let that two-goal lead slip away against Arsenal, we're going to get into that. We're going to be talking as well about the passing of Bobby Charlton. Mad stuff at the Sanchez-Pizjuan at Real Madrid. Real Madrid TV especially.
Great.
Not happy. Some tremendous games. Barcelona, by the way. You, how about that? But let's start. Just a mile or so down the road. It's Stamford Bridge, because Chelsea, it's Arsenal. I've given Pochettino a lot of passes because he's had a lot of people injured, weird stuff going on, whatever. And they go into this game against Arsenal, and things work out for Chelsea. But what I can't work out, at least work out for a while for Chelsea, is were Arsenal really bad in that first half? Or Chelsea make them look bad? Because both. Enzo Fernandez is actually playing where he should be playing.
Yeah, and Caicedo. Yeah, both, I think, Gab. The two surely linked in the sense that this was one of the worst first half we've seen since Mikel Arteta took over at the club. And that's 143 games, I think. That were the 143rd. And I think only three or four times before, they only had two shots. Like, their XG in the first half was 0.12. There was just nothing.
I think Chelsea had three shots in that first half. So, by the way,
but at least they were there. They won all the duels, all the ball. They were very much far more aggressive. They played with a lot of intensity. Arsenal had a lot of bad passes, bad touches everywhere. There was just no rhythm to Arsenal's game. There was a lot of rhythm, I thought, to this Chelsea side. And I think the jury is still out on Pochettino in terms of what he can do with his team. Even now with three games unbeaten, two wins, one draw, etc. But what they have is when they play with that intensity and that energy, Gallagher, Caicedo, Enzo, but even Sterling, Palmer, the running, Mudrik, of course, all of that, then I think they become hard to play against. They're not amazing, certainly not with the ball, but I think it's hard to play. However, as soon as they drop a bit of that intensity against a team like Arsenal, who are a better team than them, then you see that it's a bit more difficult for them. And I just don't think right now they can play on the high-intensity level for a whole 90 minutes in a game like this.
And why not? Should they be rested? There's no European football.
I know, but it's still hard, man.
I know. I did kind of feel that Cole Palmer, so you have an extra midfielder. By the way, there's none of this false nine nonsense, right? You had Cole Palmer and Gallagher ahead of Caicedo and Enzo, right? That was the basic setup. It did allow them not just to do well in terms of intensity, but also kind of put the lid on Arsenal's midfield. Equally, you can make the point that, and this, I think this applies to the whole game, Chelsea's goals were a penalty that was gifted to them by
Saliba.
By Saliba. The other one, a Mudrik one, where it's not really clear if
it's
he meant
not,
it
come
or
on,
not.
Please. We're clear, right? It's a cross.
Pochettino says 100% he meant it, and he says he practices it all the time.
Of course.
But then equally, Arsenal's goal, one, Sanchez goes walkabout, right? Doesn't realize, oh, look, Declan Rice is a professional footballer. He might actually shoot from there. And then Malagusto falling asleep at the far post.
Yeah, which is what Malagusto does.
So it was an entertaining game. I was there. I don't quite follow
it. Highest quality, was it?
No, very low quality. Again, bad weather as well, all you want. But let's go back to one of my favorite issues. David Raya, Aaron Ramsdale. Do we have an issue here?
So what, for the ball that he lost to Palmer that should have scored? Or what, or the Mudrik goal? I know he's a bit high on the Mudrik goal. He's really close to his near post as well. I'm not so sure about that. I just think it's a fluke from Mudrik. It goes in. It could have lobbed a lot of the goalkeeper. We saw Murphy scoring the same goal for Newcastle pretty much against Palace on Saturday as well.
Okay, what I question is, does David Raya's passing, which I'm assuming is the only reason he plays, does it add that much value to Arsenal's build-up?
I think so.
I know he thinks so.
Against City, okay, there was a couple of times, once that Alvarez blocked. He plays long with accuracy, which I think is what Arteta really likes.
Sure, great. But on the flip side, you have a guy where I think at some point, I don't know. But again, I go back to my original point. If you want to pick Raya, that's fine. But please don't tell us, oh, no, I'm picking them based on the opponent. And one time it might be Raya. One time maybe Ramsey will come on as a sub in some games. Just come on. We know better than that. Other thing, I miss this in real time because, you know, you're there. You don't get the benefit of the replay. Watching it again.
Yeah.
Arsenal should have had a penalty when Sanchez cleared out Gabriel Jesus. I mean, this was like, Onana against Wolves proportions. Yeah?
Except that in against Wolves, Kalatic gets actually the ball, and then Onana just clatters him. In this one, Gabriel Jesus is nowhere near the ball, but still he gets clattered. This is a foul everywhere else on the pitch. It should be a foul in the box as well.
We should point out that Arsenal are top of the league for now as we record this on a Monday morning, ahead of Spurs, obviously, are playing Fulham on a Monday night.
Yeah. Still unbeaten.
Spurs, yes. And Spurs are still... Arsenal, yeah, okay, fine.
They're still unbeaten.
It's really? Like,
yeah, 9 games of the season.
Did I dream that game against Lens? That was a different
game? No, in the league, they're unbeaten in the league.
So what? That doesn't count?
But in the league, they're unbeaten. Okay. No, they haven't lost a game in the league. Mm-hmm. City have lost games. Liverpool have lost games.
Okay.
Chelsea have lost games.
How many Spurs lost?
Yeah.
Ooh,
Spurs are still unbeaten.
Respect
too.
For Big Ange.
But like, how Sorry, can... like?
I had to
is it weird for them... What?
We don't talk like about Spurs on the show because they're playing tonight, so I needed to give them a mention.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Otherwise, my Spurs fan friends would get on to me. All right. What strikes me about this, and you're right, they're right up there. I think right now they're really far, really, really far from where they could be. And they are mitigating circumstances. Obviously, Saka's injury, Martinelli also missed time. Then there's others who I don't think are on their level. Like, I look at this game today and I saw, all right, he started Georgie in midfield.
Yeah.
Didn't necessarily have a great game. Maybe he did it. He wanted an extra passer, I assume, away from home, London derby. But if it's not Georgie, it's Havertz, who obviously had issues too. Havertz coming on later.
Yeah.
That hasn't popped yet. Zinchenko, I thought, had a really poor first half, came off at halftime.
Yeah, I was on the yellow as well.
So what I'm wondering, so then I said to myself, okay, so Arsenal can get better when everybody's fit, clicking and fine. But then I look at this and I really wonder, are they going to get better, or is he so fixated on certain things? I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Zinchenko, who is an attacking midfielder playing left back, are very comfortable moving into midfield when they're on the ball, doing that whole thing with a fullback, right? He goes off at halftime, bring on Tomiyasu, and you ask Tomiyasu to do the same thing. Now, Tomiyasu is a center back who can play full back, mostly right back.
Yeah.
Now, he's playing left back, and you're asking him to play in the middle. He's not Beckenbauer. I don't think Tomiyasu's ever been asked.
You don't have to be Beckenbauer to play in that position. Sometimes it's to have another body there, especially when you lose the ball. And for that, he could be good there. You don't always have your full back coming inside to be the creative touch like Zinchenko is. You can have a different profile of a fullback coming inside as well.
Right.
Stones is not Beckenbauer either. He's probably
Stones
better technically
than much better passer
still,
than
but still, it's still not Beckenbauer.
I know. I think this is putting... This is not putting somebody in their best condition. Because you know what? You can say, oh, he doesn't have to be Beckenbauer. He just has to be there. You counter-press when you lose the ball. You have an extra body, an extra filter. This is fine. But at what expense? You know, you want to put players in the position where they can, I think, where they can affect the game the most rather than having your system. And to me, this felt a little bit like putting the system first.
But then the second half is the better half from Arsenal with Tomiyasu there, no Zinchenko.
Yeah, I don't think because of Tomiyasu. It's also because Zinchenko was really bad in the first, the first half.
True.
The other thing I don't get is we've seen... I think Jorginho started with the last two games. Is that?
Yeah, City. So yeah, it was the same midfield against City.
So obviously when Jorginho's in midfield, it's a very different vibe, setup and everything than when Havertz or Fabio Vieira are there.
Yeah, because Rice doesn't play the same position.
So then you're asking Rice to... But Rice also doesn't do what Havertz does. I mean, he's further up. It is more of a... He's closer to the line where Odegaard is, but it's still... changes everything, right? You don't have the physical presence in front of the back four because if Rice moves up and whatever. And so I'm thinking like, okay, so now again, you'll change your system there a little bit and you're certainly changing personnel and it's affecting you, but then you won't do it in other situations. I don't follow this.
I think Partey's injury, I think ideally he would play Partey in a game like this and Rice in midfield with other guards and not Jorginho.
Or the city spent 80 million on. The best on earth.
Yeah, but again, you can understand what this is, and that would have been a special game, I think, for Havertz to start away at Stamford Bridge, you know, in those conditions. But maybe he should have started him. I don't know. And I don't know if Havertz is going to work as a number eight or not. I just think that they will improve collectively and individually as well. There's players who haven't hit the height yet, like a Martinelli, for example, or your best friend Gabriel Jesus, who you love so dearly. You know, their best form compared to at times the form that they had last season, where Arsenal were better. But if you look at the same fixtures last season, and it's pointless. I know I'm contradicting myself. It's pointless. Yeah. But if you still do it, I think they have as many points against those nine teams than they did last season, albeit they haven't lost this year compared to last year where they had lost. So it's not bad. I still think it's a decent / good start of the season from them. But they will have to improve if they want to win the league, because it might not be enough if they keep playing like this.
And here's my thing, is I wonder what their path to improvement is. So because
individually and collectively.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But I think some players, I think, have an obvious ceiling. The more I see Eddie Nketiah, the more I think this man has a ceiling. Right?
Yeah, but look, he came on for 20 minutes and he shook that defense. He could have scored a great goal. He ran in behind like that.
And the more I see Gabriel Jesus, again,
you've never really liked him.
No. I like what he does, but it seems to me, I wonder if to some degree, we've gone peak meta and the center has just collapsed because of all the things Gabriel Jesus does off the ball when he's not in possession, his movement, his runs, his pressing, blah, 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 which Pep loved so much until he decided, yeah, I love it, but I don't love it to the tune of giving you a new long-term contract.
Yeah.
This trumps the other thing, which is what do you actually do with the ball? And look, I'm not saying Gabriel Jesus is a poor footballer.
No.
I'm just saying, I think if you look at the top 20 teams in Europe, you look at who their center forwards are and what they provide when you're in possession, I think you're going to find most of them are going to be well ahead of what Gabriel Jesus gives you with the ball. And for a team that has so many passers from Odegaard to Saka, people who deliver service, I think at some point, I think it comes back to bite you.
Maybe
he should play wide more often. I don't know. Maybe you rotate him, Martinelli, and Saka. Well, Saka, I think, should probably always play. Maybe you rework it and you do a front two, something. But
maybe, yeah.
I just think the scoring load, and I know Odegaard scores a lot, and Havertz potentially can.
And Trossard and Saka and Martinelli, and maybe that's what Arteta wants in terms of balance. Instead of a 130 goal a season striker who doesn't move out of the box,
I just think there is a rigidity, rigidity and belief in your ideas, right, are two sides of the same coin, right? You know, it goes back to the old Pep, well, you know, Plan B is to do Plan A better, right? I just wonder if, you know, there's a window of opportunity that Arsenal have, I think, now, because it's a young team and so on, to go and keep growing and really challenge City.
Yeah.
And I think it's still open. I think they can challenge City this year. And Spurs and Liverpool, let's get credit, because they're all right there. Right. I'm just wondering if maybe you shouldn't become a little bit more pragmatic in your approach at this stage.
Maybe.
But
I thought his subs were spot on again. I think only Newcastle and Brighton this season, their subs have had more involvement in goals in the Premier League, which shows that coming off the bench, which is something that Arsenal didn't really have last season, certainly not as much. And remember last season we kept saying he plays the same 11, it's always the same 11. The same players that have
to have more depth. Yes.
And I think that's good. And you were not too keen on Pochettino's subs in this game. I don't understand why Nico Jackson comes on. And for me, that's a turning point in the game, because that box that you rightly described before was gone. And suddenly you had a focal point and it was much easier for Arsenal to defend against and to actually go and press, because you kind of knew what Chelsea were going to do.
I think the thinking...
Rhys James made no sense whatsoever.
We'll get to Rhys James in a minute.
But yeah.
I think the Nico Jackson thing was a case of, okay, Arsenal are chasing the game. Let's have an outlet. Because let's face it, you know, Cole Palmer did well, but, you know, this was a central midfielder. There's two central midfielders, him and Gallagher, next to each other, disrupting things, right?
Yeah.
At that point in the game, you wanted to have the outlet. You wanted to have the pace, right?
Yeah.
It's a wet pitch. your pacey players are Sterling, who obviously, you know, you wanted to take off at some point because he's getting more tired, and Mudrick, who is a roll of the dice. And so he sends on Madueke to give you that directness, and Jackson.
Much later, Madueke than Jackson.
Sorry?
Madueke much later than Jackson.
Right. But I'm saying that was, and again, you could argue whether he should have come on before. But I think this was the idea. This is what he was trying to do. And Jackson had that chance one-on-one.
Yeah, okay, he had. But...
And look, at least Jackson didn't get booked this game.
Yeah, you're right. So in your match between his goals and yellow cards, it's
leveling up. That was a terrible touch. You know, you look at both ways. There was a terrible touch, which Raya got to, right?
Mm.
Or as my friend put it, he passed the ball to Raya. Equally, though, he got himself in that position.
Yeah.
Right? So if he scores a goal, then we're saying, oh, Poch, how smart, you know, was Jackson's directness at that stage. I still don't know. I still don't know where you go this season with Jackson as your main center forward.
You don't. In January, they're going to sign.
A couple years down the road. Yeah. And 100%. So the great Armando experiment is over as well? You're going to
think? No, I don't know. I just don't know if he's good enough really to take this team back to the top. But again, same with Nkunku. Where is he going to Nkunku play? Well, you can't play Cole Palmer, Gallagher, and Nkunku. Well, no, you can. And Sterling and Nkunku all together?
Well, no. I think one out of Palmer or Gallagher misses out.
Yeah.
Who goes back? I think that's pretty obvious.
Where do you stand on the penalty? I'll tell you what I liked. That a big star like Sterling wants to take the pen. I can understand. Usually players like him who take penalties in a team, I think players like that would always try to get the penalty, right? Even if Cole Palmer is the penalty taker, he scored the game before in the Premier League on the penalty. What I love the most about this whole little scene was that Enzo Fernandez, who hasn't even been in this country for a year, at Chelsea for a year, whose English probably you would think is okay-ish just about, he's the one, and he's only 22 years old, step in and say, no. Just, and said to Sterling, hey, give him the ball, it's his. And then Sterling looks at him saying like, what? Did you really say what I think you said? And Enzo goes again, yeah, it's his ball, it's his pen. And I love that. And I love Enzo. I've always done. He's a leader in that team and they need him, especially when, like you said before, he played in the right position. But I just love that, you know?
You'd almost think that Enzo and the manager come from the same country and the manager gave very clear rules and, you know, Raheem Sterling maybe wanted to test that a little bit.
Yeah.
But by the way, if it had turned into a dispute, I would have assumed Thiago Silva comes up from the back and says, guys, you know who I am? My name is Thiago Silva.
He didn't. Enzo did.
You behave.
Enzo did.
No, I know. But you had Thiago in reserve to sort that out.
Yeah, I understood.
And I thought Palmer did fine. I think Palmer, I don't dislike him, but
I
think it's a massive transition going from a team where you're surrounded by all these players who are far better than you, players where you can give a bad pass and they're going to be able to control it, players who are going to anticipate the movements all the time, and coming into this game in those conditions with these players around him who are still very much trying to find themselves.
Yeah, and we will know because this was the first game of a horrendous fixture list now for Chelsea where they would play City and Spurs and maybe United and Brighton or I don't know.
Brentford.
No, I mean, I think it's, Newcastle. It's like the five games coming up are huge.
The other thing on the substitutions, and again, when you're there, you kind of view the game a little differently, but because Reece James is fit again. There was some talk that he'd be ready to start against Arsenal. I understand why he didn't start. You don't want to make it your first start. But at some point, he sends Reece James on.
Yeah, 84th minute.
84th minute. And he sends Reece James on for one of the midfielders, right? And I assumed, he's going to go to a back three. Reece James has played it before. Maybe it makes sense. Less up and down. Your first game back. Marlon Gusto is going to stay where he is wide. Instead, I don't know what you would call the position he played. He sort of played like right-sided midfield kind.
Like that,
Where... he was hardly involved. I think he had two touches, maybe three touches.
Four passes, I think he made in total.
He left Malagusto defending the far post, Which, guess what? I don't know what happened with this guy, or, you know, if he had something in his eye, but he completely loses
Trossard.
Loses Trossard. Trossard, I know, has got that little invisibility superpower sometimes.
But that's what Malo Gusto does, you know. Defensively, sometimes it's shaky.
You can't concede a goal like that at the far post.
No, definitely not.
And
not at that time in the game, certainly.
I can deal with people making mistakes because they're being positive and attacking. I can't deal with people making mistakes.
It's a basic defender skill to see that and to defend that.
You should know where your center backs are, and you should know where Reece James is, right?
Yeah, and Trossard.
And you should know, above all, where Trossard. I don't know. There's a lot of talking points. I think there's a long way for both these teams to go. Arsenal starting at a higher level, a much higher level,
of course,
obviously, than Chelsea right now. It's a longer rebuild, whatever. But I'll be curious to know what Poch does next. Is he going to become enamored of this strikerless system? The other thing... Oh, sorry, on the Mudrick one, you're 100% certain he didn't mean it.
Oh, come on.
Right. Okay. All right.
I don't even think there's a debate. What is the debate? You can see where he looks. You can see his body. You can just see everything. But good for him. He went in. You take all those goals.
Pochettino says he practices this all the time.
Of course, yeah. Lamine Kamara, who scored a 58-meter lob against Monaco, said he practices it all the time too.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, enough Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Wild stuff at the Sanchez Pizjuan, Jules. It finishes 1-1 between Sevilla and Real Madrid. There is so much acrimony to talk about, surpassing even the football, which I find a little sad.
Yeah, so I didn't see the Real Madrid TV pre-match video on the referee, so I'll let you deal with that.
I'll deal with this straight away because this is important, right? So there's a referee, and there's a bunch of refereeing incidents in this game that we're going to talk about. So the referee, the Burgos Bengoechea, right, before the thing, Real Madrid released a video where they point out all of the mistakes that he has made and his decisions that have hurt Real Madrid before the game.
Yeah.
That's not on.
During the game, Real Madrid scored two goals early, and obviously both are disallowed. But
were they correct decisions?
I thought they were.
Yeah. The Valverde one, supposedly, right,
so
were is because... All right, so that's VAR, the disallowed, right?
Yeah.
But the Real Madrid TV is circulating now, like, a picture that one of the fans took from the stands. Like, it's like a still photo.
Which supposedly... He's onside.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. VAR can't look at a picture from...
I know.
Other than the fact that, like, pictures and perspectives can be, you know, inevitably there's a parallax effect or whatever. Yeah. I mean, what are you doing?
I know, man. But I don't know. Again, we were not in the stadium. We were just watching on television. But it felt even before that... It was like it was so tense, and there was something in the air. Obviously, with Sergio Ramos playing again
against Diego Alonso making his debut for Sevilla.
Diego Alonso as a new manager, Sergio Ramos against his former team for the first time since he left.
18 years.
Yeah, and so it was amazing. To be fair, the Ramos Rudiger like I'm grabbing you cheek stuff. Bellingham as well looked quite pumped by the whole thing. And then when Sevilla scored, when Alaba scored the own goal, you thought, okay, 74th or 5th minute, this is it. And for Carvajal to score a header as well, you were like, okay, right. There was no Jude Bellingham magic. There were chances for both sides. I think a draw is maybe a fair result-ish.
Yeah, Sevilla. I would say there was a foul, the Navas on Vinicius.
Yeah, true.
I thought that should have been a penalty.
Yeah, that could have been given.
I don't know. I thought, like... De Burgos Bengoechea had a bad game, he had a tricky game. I mean, I thought he made some wrong decisions, but the way I see it is the Bellingham thing was very weird, where the goal got disallowed and 15 seconds passed. He says he whistled, but the play nobody heard him. Yeah. It was so loud. There's got to be a better way to deal with this, right? But and I'm all for criticizing referees after the game if you're doing it in a civil way, whatever, or even a non-civil way if you want to be uncivil. But to do this before the
game,
to plant, that's That's Bush League. There's somebody Real Madrid, and it's not Florentino Perez because he's more big picture. I know for a fact it's not Carlo Ancelotti. There's somebody there who thinks like, aha, this is how we're going to win the title by getting into referees' heads ahead of time. You can't do that. No. Jules, if I come out, if I go and post on Twitter and I say, gee, I hope Jules doesn't come to my house and break into my safe and steal all my jewelry tonight. What message does it send? It sends a message you're untrustworthy.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you... this is really not helpful.
I mean, I don't know who's refereeing the Clásico this weekend coming.
I doubt it's going to be the Burgos Bingo chair.
You don't fancy that, for sure. And speaking of Vinicius, Gab, he was racially abused again for the 19th time. But at least this time, nobody tried to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah, look, I think this is the way you have to deal with it. If it happens, and unfortunately, it does happen. Hopefully, it'll stop. But you can... there were several Sevilla fans, two or three, who... making very obvious monkey gestures. One of them you can actually see on camera.
One of kids.
And Sevilla immediately took ownership, said this is unacceptable, found him, ejected him, filed a complaint with the police against him. This is what has to happen. And I felt for Vinicius, he had a penalty. By the way, shout out to Orion Nyland. You must be the absolute wussiest Norwegian in the world. Did you see the way he went down? Did you see that?
I know, but
come on, man. Seriously, grow some. Liverpool win the Merseyside Derby 2-0, but Jules, I kind of feel once again it's about the referee's decision. This time, Greg Pawson.
Yeah, Greg Pawson, you're a bad referee. I think we told you before, but we were going to repeat it again. So Konate should have had... Let's go with the ones that he didn't give. First of all, that nobody gave. And I think Konate, as much as he's my boy and I love him dearly, that was the second yellow. He should have been sent off.
And it was 0-0 at the time.
Yeah, Ashley Young... deserved red card, I think. I mean,
so he got that one right.
He got that one right.
By the way, 38 years old, I expect better judgment from Ashley Young.
Completely. You know, and if you're Luis Diaz, you're very clever because you know exactly what Ashley Young is going to do once you've dribbled kind of past him, and you won that foul and you won that red card more than Ashley Young committing it, really. But the penalty, how can none of the three, I mean, especially two referees, see the handball from Michael Keane? You could literally see it from Manchester.
This is why we have VAR. I'm glad it wasn't there. I don't know why it took them forever, but I'd rather take them forever and they get the decision right.
Yeah.
Especially with Liverpool these days.
Sure. Inter Milan win away to Torino 3-0 and the top of the table as well, Gab. Inzaghi loves his substitutions.
He does. I mean, Inter a little bit under pressure in the first half.
Yeah, didn't need a half time. Torino played well.
Suarez looked great until he got hurt. And then, boom, in come Denzel Dumfries, Carlos Augusto, and Davide Fratesi. And all of a sudden, Inter's whole demeanor changes.
Yeah.
Lillian.
It's okay.
Marcus Thuram queuing the comeback, and they go on to win 3-0. They just have these levels that they can go to, and I think they deserve their top spot in the league for now.
Yeah.
Pep Guardiola gives Edison the day off, and Manchester City beat Brighton 2-1. Now, Jules, the two-game losing streak is over. Haaland breaks a month-long goal drought. Yeah. All good, yeah?
Well, yeah, although it was not as comfortable towards the end. Akanji got sent off. I thought cheaply, really.
It was stupid from Akanji. You expect more.
And then it was a little bit shaky. Brighton played quite well, I thought, in that second half. Ansu Fati scored a goal. But that first half was really good from City, to be fair. Really good from Alvarez, from Jeremy Doku, especially on that left-hand side.
Yeah, against James Milner, but...
Yeah, but then I don't know why De Zerbi puts Milner there. I mean, you see the team sheet.
De Zerbi explained it. He said if we had more pressure on the ball...
It doesn't matter.
It wouldn't have mattered because Milner would have had time to get to where he needed to be.
But it doesn't matter. Even if Milner was closer to Doku, that was a mismatch completely. So, and the fact that De Zerbi changed at halftime shows that he was not just... that the guy carrying the ball for City had to...
Just to let you know a secret, this losing streak is nonsense because the Arsenal game was so even and ultimately it came down to the shape of Nathan Ake's face.
Yeah, very true.
And the Erling Haaland, yes, it's a month not scoring for City, but he did score two for Norwich.
And it's a great goal outside of the box, which he rarely scores. So well done to him. A huge win for Juventus as they beat Milan 1-0 at San Siro on Sunday night. And now just 2 points off the top, Gab. I think it's fair to say that Malik Chow's red cards influence the outcome of the game.
Yeah, I'd say just a little bit. It was a correct decision. Milan are aggressive. They commit people forward. When you do that, you leave people. You risk leaving your center backs one on one.
Yeah,
Chow one on one.
That's a rugby tackle. You got the wrong spot.
Yeah. I don't know if he mistook Moise Kean for Erling Haaland because of the striking physical similarities, but it was obvious that Kean was going to go down, and it was obvious he was going to be sent off.
Yeah.
I thought Milan did all right until that point. I thought they were on top with 10 men, and especially 10 men when you don't have Theo Hernandez.
Suspended. Magic Mike as well.
Yeah, Magic Mike, I don't think, would have made such an impact in this game, because Juve's only goal was a deflected Manuel Locatelli shot. Fun fact, you probably know this already because it's the kind of weird stuff that you know.
Yeah.
Manuel Locatelli scored for Juve to beat Milan at the San Siro on October 22nd, 2023. He also scored for Milan to beat Juve 1-0 on October 22nd, 2023.
So, exactly.
Weird. Spooky Halloween.
Spooky.
Barcelona huff and puff and eventually break down Athletic Bilbao, winning 1-0. With so many injuries, Xavi has to dig deep into the cantera and extract this 17-year-old with just 9 minutes of B-team football under his belt. How about that Mark Guiu, Jules?
Amazing. I love the
Guiu,
run. I love the run. And then two touches, the control, and then to score his first ever goal for Barcelona. What a debut, really, coming off the bench.
He's
like
a little iceberg, isn't he?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, then he got a bit too excited. He got a yellow card for chasing the ball and tackling Unai Simon. I love the goal. I love even more maybe the assist from Joao Felix, the first touch, the way he turns, and then the through ball for the run of Mark Guiu. So in the end, it's a good win. They need that win, Barca, especially before the Clásico, especially to go back close to Real Madrid, Girona, and etc. But it was hard. And Athletic Club de Bilbao are a really strong team. They're aggressive. They're tough to play against. They had chances,
They also had chances, but I also want to say Unai Simon, I think, would have been man of the match in this
game. Yeah, that famine safe.
With all those guys out of commission, I think Barcelona deserved this.
Yeah, definitely. Harry Kane scores again, and Bayern Munich beat Mainz 3-1 away. Gab, Tuchel is still unbeaten, but also still third in the table.
Yeah, and it's not great, but they score early, they wrap it up. Mainz hasn't actually won since like last March or something. They beat last March was actually Thomas Tuchel and Bayern.
Yeah.
How about that? I want to give a shout out, especially shout out to Sven Ulreich. He made an unbelievable save off of Lee. Go and check it out. The reason I say this is, let's celebrate backup goalkeepers. I always thought they were weirdos.
You like that today.
I think Sven Ulreich grew up with like a poster of Raymond van der Hau on his wall saying like, this is what I aim to be, a backup goalkeeper at a super club.
Oh, bless him.
Diogo Dalot's late goal gives an injury-riddled Manchester United 2-1 win at Sheffield United, who I just realized only have 1 point all season. Jules. Yeah. Erik ten Hag says, quote, they found a way to win.
Well, yeah, I mean, they didn't play well at all. That was bad. It was a great goal by Dalot. I think a goal that Sir Bobby would have been really proud of.
Yeah, I think Wes Fodderingham could have done better.
Yeah, could have done better still. It's still the way, the position that he's in to start with, his first touch on the half turn and then, the three quarter and then hitting it towards the top corner like that. They needed that badly. They still can't really score. I mean, Scott McTominay's goal, the first one, is a terrible goal. He's the top goal scorer in the league now, 3 goals.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing from a Manchester United point of view after 9 games. Rashford, Martial, Hoyland, who had chances again of scoring. It's worrying, especially because who did they play again next weekend? Oh, yeah, Manchester City.
Manchester City, who lost to Wolves, of course. But and who Manchester United deservedly beat, and there was no controversy whatsoever.
Hey.
I will say this about Ten Hag, and maybe I'm becoming too kind in my old age, right? Look at that back four. So basically, relative to the team that was supposed to be their starting 11 this season, they had 6 guys out, including their entire back line, including the 2 guys who were supposed to be in central midfield, Casemiro and Mason Mount. They were atrocious in the first half. At the end, they created a ton of chances. Hoyland could have missed a hat-trick of chances.
Yeah.
Amrabat hit the woodwork. Bruno, I think, hit the woodwork. They still have drive and purpose, at least that. And they're playing with a 20-year-old center forward. They're playing with a winger who's investigated for battery, assault and battery against women in 2 different continents. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, of course, there is.
So,
there is.
All right.
You too, kind.
Okay.
Bayer Leverkusen stays top of the Bundesliga, Gabby, beating Wolfsburg 2-1 on the road. Xabi Alonso show continues.
It does. This was less impressive, less dominant, the element. But then again, this is Wolfsburg away. Wolfsburg are a mid-table side.
Yeah.
I think they it was definitely grittier. I'm wondering, Patrick Schick is coming back. And I wonder if he's fit. Okay, I'm not saying Boniface sits.
Yeah.
But does he find a place in Xabi Alonso?
Why, you play Wirtz and Patrick Schick behind Boniface?
I don't know. The man scored. The man scored 24 goals in the Bundesliga 18 months ago. Let's not forget, right?
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Strasbourg 3-0 and stay 2 points off the top. Jules, we saw that 4-2-4 you enjoy so much.
Yeah, we saw Barcola, we saw Killian, Gonzalo Ramos. I mean, Carlos Soler plays the son of a right back, right wing back, a bit weird stuff.
This is prime Lucho.
Strasbourg had never won ever in their history in Paris. I think 37 games in a row now, which is the worst series by far in the French top flight. So they were not going to win on Saturday. But it was good. It was good. And Killian scored again after four games for PSG without scoring. So that was positive.
With a penalty.
Yeah, it doesn't. They all count. They all count. Newcastle destroyed Crystal Palace 4-0. Alessandro Tonali comes on as a sub and gets an ovation from St. James's Park. Gab, were you surprised to see him? I mean, we saw Zaniolo starting for Aston Villa too. And what's next?
Yeah, very different situations, of course, Zaniolo and Tonali. I was kind of surprised. I think he can come out and you can get the support of the crowd. I don't know what you got. I mean, he came off the bench towards the end when the game was over. I don't know Eddie Howe and Tonali in their relationship well enough to understand it. The reality is, you know he's going to get back.
Yeah.
This week they're going to discuss the plea bargain. I think it's going to come in between 12 and 18 months. But it is certainly made a lot worse by the fact that he bet on both Milan and Brescia. And they're really going to go scrutinize every inch of his life. So I hope that when he gave his deposition last week, he gave the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your boy Antoine Griezmann bags a hat-trick, albeit one of the most fugazi hat-tricks in history.
Why are you dissing him?
Because
then you're going to say, oh yeah, but they play against 10 men, which is true for a long time, which is true.
Atletico Madrid beat Rafa Benitez and Celta Vigo 3-0.
Yes. Yes.
It's a lot easier when you play against 10 men for more than an hour.
I know, but he scored a hat-trick again.
Yeah, one was the penalty, one was the goalkeeper.
One is a Madrid goal. He meant it 100% right foot up. Here we go.
On the Griezmann one, I would believe that he bent it, actually, because he's Antoine Griezmann. But you know for a fact that he didn't.
100%. Okay. He's 7 goals away from breaking the Aragonese record of the most goals scored for Atletico Madrid in their history, which I think means a lot to him.
Luis Aragonés, of course, was a midfielder.
But it doesn't matter. It's him who holds the record. Like, there's nothing that Griezmann can do about that. It could have been Suarez if he'd stayed. It could have been Falcao. It could have been Falcao if he'd stayed. Diego Costa if he stayed. That's what I meant. But no, it would be Griezmann. And I think that would be a very important day for him.
You know what? It could have been Suarez if he stayed and played on until he was 60. By the way, Rafa Benitez now, people are saying he's going to get the sack or whatever. I do feel for Rafa. Rafa
can never won a game at home. They've won one all season that was away. Never won at home.
But you know those games where Celta, even with 10 men, fight and create chances. Oblak has to make some changes. They showed a lot of spirit in this game. And they did not look like...
You know
the whole thing about playing for the manager?
No, I know.
They looked like a team that didn't want to let the manager...
They tweeted
don't want to say about
they
Rafa.
They tuned it up against Barca away. He takes Thiago Aspas off, which was cheap. You see what I mean?
I'm like, not suggesting Rafa's always right. I'm just saying.
I know.
Celta looked like a team that really wanted to get back into it.
Yeah,
for a long time,
where they are.
It looked like they could.
Yeah, sure. I agree. Some relief for my boy, Rudy Garcia, Gab. Kvisa Kvaratskhelia scored 2 goals, and despite the injury to Victor Osimhen, Napoli win 3-1 away at Verona.
Yo, this was all set up for Napoli to lose. And
Yeah.
So just imagine Rudy Garcia's international break, right?
Yes.
Which begins with...
Yes, remind us the week before.
Yeah. Okay, so the break starts with everybody reporting that, Aurelio De Laurentiis, his boss, is meeting with Antonio Conte. Rudy Garcia's gone. He's falling out with too many players. Nobody likes him. He's a weirdo, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, touch that bullet. I'm still here. And then...
Somehow.
Victor Osimhen gets injured. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's a muscular injury. And then he goes and he has to play Verona away. Verona, where they really don't like Napoli and Neapolitans in general. And all of a sudden, he's like, uh-oh, is this where it all ends? But no, Kvitsa Kvartskhelia shows up, scores the two goals. Raspadori was exceptional through the midfield. Your boy Jens Kajuste or Kajuste or whatever. Because, by the way, that guy, he's part Swedish, partly from Goa, apparently.
Yeah,
I don't know his backstory, but it's pretty remarkable.
He was one of the like really young, promising kind of prodigy. And then he went to Haas and he had some good moments, but also some really average ones.
Anyway, he has his best game in a Napoli shirt. Yeah. It's a small sample size. And it all works. And I look forward and I say, you know what? You can get by without Victor for a while. If Kvaratskhelia does like this, you got Raspadori, you got Simeone. Still some things to work out at the back, but because surely Nathan can get better than he has been.
Yeah.
But, you know, rolling along a little bit.
I know.
Time to show love to Girona, Jules, because I won't. they come back from two goals down against Almeria to win 5-2 and somehow are still joint top of the league.
Yeah. It's great. They score goals for fun. They're very attacking. They love movement. They score some lovely goals. Dovbeck was with two. Savio, I mean, Savio is a great player. Again, he should never really be there without the City group. He wouldn't.
You know what?
Be there.
This is such an off-brand team, right? So you have the fake Mitchell. You've got the fake Savio, right? You've got the fake Blind, right?
A lot of people in France thought that is that the Mitchell that was so bad for Marseille? No, it's not. It's not. It's a better Mitchell.
I think the fake Blind as well. I'm sure there's
Daily Blind, you see, who we often mocked in the past.
And the real Blind is his father, Danny, of course.
Much better. But yeah, I just love the story. It won't last, let's be honest. But for now, it's good.
Yeah, Manchester City love it too.
You're just not romantic, that's what. This was back on Friday, Gabi, but Borussia Dortmund beat Werder Bremen 1-0 thanks to a very nice Julian Brandt goal and what a pass by Emre Can, by the way. And Eddie Tengic even got a solid half hour from Giovanni Reina. They're level with Bayern as well.
Yeah, normally if you're level with Bayern, you're like, oh, look, you're top of the table. Like, no, they're third place, like Bayern. I thought they were much better. I thought this was one-way traffic. This was actually assured, accomplished. They've strung a couple of these together.
Yeah.
It's almost like a back three when you think about it, because Emre Can is so deep in midfield. It seems to work in the cover. And, you know, Gio Reyna, before he scored those two goals for the U.S. over the break, I think he had played like 9 minutes or 7 minutes, something like that, for Borussia Dortmund. He needs time on the pitch. Let me put it this way. I don't want to say it's not Borussia Dortmund's job to get Gio Reyna productive for the U.S., But if Gio Reyna is getting on the pitch and being productive, because they have so much competition in those kind of attacking midfield positions, that means that he's performing and he's earning his place in the side. And if that happens, that's good news for the U.S. And I think it's good news for Borussia Dortmund, because as we always said about Reyna, he has a very high ceiling.
Yeah.
Monaco stay top in Ligue 1, Jules, as they beat Metz, but Wissam Ben Yedder is now under house arrest. Presumably his brother too, no?
Yeah, his brother. I mean, they're not in the same house because they can't be in touch with each other. They can't contact either the two girls who are accusing them of rape. That was back in July. We mentioned it in shows before. But the investigation, I mean, the two Ben Yedder brothers deny all the accusations and saying that it was consensual.
Consensual.
Yeah, that's what you say in English. The girls obviously saying that it was not, they didn't want to do anything. So the investigation and the kind of court case continues, really. This is not good news for him. He has to stay at the training ground, basically.
This is what I was wondering about this. Two questions here. First of all, is this preemptive house arrest because he's deemed to be a flight risk? So why?
Yeah, I think so.
Would they think he's going to escape?
Yeah, you also need to, I think, go to the police station.
And check in.
You check in every day or every 2 days, something like that.
So to be clear, house arrest doesn't mean that he can leave his house, because he can obviously play games and stuff like that. He does not live in the Stade Louis II, by the way.
But he sleeps at the training ground every night. That's what he has to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of timetable on this?
No, not really. I don't think there's a date yet for any like court appearances from him or from his brother. But this was the latest development. And to be, it doesn't seem that had an impact on, certainly not on Monaco's form, because they played really well against Metz on the weekend. Metz, who scored that great goal, we mentioned it earlier, the Lamine Camara 58-meter lob. But Monaco and Adi Hütter with 7 forwards at some point on the pitch in that second half just love attacking and love scoring goals.
So going back to Ben Yedder, and I'm not a lawyer, and you know my views on this. I don't understand. I still don't. I don't understand the house. I understand putting somebody in prison if you think they're a flight risk or if you think they might engage in witness tampering. This is why you would normally do it.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's first of all, it's not like it's house arrest where he can't leave the house, right? He can leave to go to work, check into the police or whatever. Secondly, he's a famous footballer. If he's going to tamper with witnesses, people can still come see him. He can do it anyway. Yeah, this is what I'm saying. And in terms of flight risk, he's pretty famous. What's he going to do? Like go and, you know, go and escape to North Korea or something? I don't know. It's such an odd story.
It is a weird story. Gab, let's check in on the Roma and Jose Mourinho. Stefan El Shaarawy delivers the injury time winner against Monza away at the weekend, and the special one celebrates by getting sent off, of course, for the fourth time since the start of last season.
Okay, so I'm going to
slight... It's a bit of like shushing and like... You know,
yeah,
like
so basically what he did was after they scored... No, it's not just the shushing. Is he turned to the Monza bench and he like did the gesture where he brings his hands to his eyes.
Oh, yeah, crying
more,
baby as well.
Cry more, right? I mean, we've gone full WWE now at this stage with Jose Mourinho because the Monza coach, Raffaele Palladino, he really does not like him. They really don't like each other, right? And they've had this back and forth between the two of them. And he said pregame that they don't like each other. And then afterwards, he said like, oh, yeah, I got sent off because I said some, you know, I didn't like the way they behaved towards me and I let them know. And so I mocked them. I'm like, all right, fine. If you're honest about it, that's fine. But he also came out and he said, oh, look, we didn't deserve to win. Monza played better than we did. So, you know, you go figure that out. Not that Jose you'd expect. Upshot now is he's going to be banned for the next game, which is against his old club.
Exactly.
Inter, where he
I
won
didn't
the
wonder
trip.
If he was on purpose, to be fair, not to go there. No, no.
Four red cards in Serie A alone since the start of the 2022-23 season. I mean, this is what, like, they must have played 50 games, right? Excluding the games where he was suspended.
Yeah, which is probably like
10 games.
Or 10, even.
This is what? This is like one red card in five? And this doesn't even include the shenanigans in the Europa League, which of course got suspended. I don't know. People love it. I feel like I'm watching a soap opera, but people love it and Roma wins. So who are we to argue? The goal machine that is Serhu Girassi does it again as Stuttgart win 3-0 away to Union Berlin. Jules, he's up to 14 goals in 8 games. He's now going to be out with a hamstring injury for up to a month.
Yeah, that's sad because he scored the first goal and then got injured in what looked like a really just random incident. And it's bad, although Silas... who obviously played for Paris FC in Paris, scored a great goal after, and I suspect would play up front. Instead of him, when you're such in great form and you're on course to beat a lot of records, not that he would have continued at that pace, of course, but still, to be out for maybe 4 to 6 weeks, it's sad.
So you're one of those people who believes that momentum is a thing in sports. The hot hand.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's interesting. There's a lot of analytics people. I don't know where I stand.
But I just want him to keep playing. Not stopping. Even if he had a cool thing, Stuttgart second.
Yeah.
How about Aston Villa, Gab? 11 consecutive wins at home, including Sunday's 4-1 demolition of West Ham. And Unai Emery is 2 points off the top of the table. Since he took over a year ago, I think today maybe, or yesterday it was to the day, only Liverpool, maybe not Liverpool now with the win yesterday. Only Arsenal and City have taken more points than Unai.
I'm sure you're loving it. LME is loving it too. By the way, it's 2 points off the top of the table now. It could be 5 points off the top of the table after Spurs play tonight.
True.
I thought they looked really, really good. They looked really, really good. Ollie Watkins, his movement up front, the understanding with Diaby, really, really solid. I thought my man Zaniolo starting. Yeah. I thought he did his part too. By the way, I want to get your take on this in a digression. I was watching this game on the television. Jamie Carragher, who I really like, He laid into Zaniolo because he collided with Aguirre and he went down holding his head. Now, it did look to me like Aguirre's elbow caught him, whether it was a foul or not. And so the referee to stop the game, he's lying on the ground, he goes to the side of the pitch and so on. And Carragher said, well, the referee shouldn't stop the game because, you know, you should if it's a serious head injury, but you know, something like that, I can tell straight away it's not real and Zaniolo's conning the referee or whatever. It seems weird to me to be conning the referee at that stage of the game. It'd break the moment. Well, whatever it is, right? But me and myself, I don't want a referee who's busy officiating the game being the one to adjudicate if somebody has suffered a head injury and maybe a concussion from 30 yards away. I went to the guy off the pitch.
That's what you mean.
Right?
I watched it on French television anyway, so I was not, I don't know, I didn't know what Carragher, but I saw later on that he was not happy and thought that was soft and like kind of playmaking from Zaniolo. I don't know.
I mean, like, I think to some point we have to have like a level of trust on the pitch between the players, right?
Sure.
Players have always time wasted, have always broken
momentum. Yeah, referees
and whatever,
know that.
Right? Referees know that. But if somebody gets hit in the head or you think they got hit in the head, you have to allow them to get treatment, right? It's not like you as a referee, you can't be the one to decide
definitely.
That.
No, definitely.
Nice win the Mediterranean derby, or as I like to call it, the Italian manager derby. As Francesco Farioli's Nice beats Rino Gattuso's Marseille 1-0. He's second in the table, the child prodigy. Julian who?
I guess, again, I think, Gab, they're the only team in the five big leagues in Europe never to have been behind, never to have conceded first a goal. It's incredible, really. Defensively, they're so strong.
It's all because of him.
Maybe, but they got a bit lucky as well because just before their goal, which came right at the end, the Evan Gesson's goal, Aubameyang hit the post, then they lost Balerdi, who was sent off for two yellow cards, and rightly so. So the game could have gone differently. Could also have been a 0-0, which I think would have been a fair result. The draw would have been
I thought Marseille played well.
I was surprised. Yeah, no, because Gattuso worked them really hard in the 10 days of the international break.
Did he shout too? And
he shouted a lot. You know, like, as I think I told you the other day, but someone at Marseille told me the other day, that the best is probably when in the morning everybody arrives at the training ground at La Commanderie and then Gattuso is there to welcome everybody and there's a kiss and then there's a slap on the face as you arrive at 10 a.m. or 9:30 or 9 a.m. for breakfast, which is the Gattuso way, really. But yeah, maybe the win for Nice was a little bit harsh for Marseille, but they continue their great start of the season. Well done to them. Them and Monaco currently top two in France.
I remember when Gattuso was in Greece, and obviously there's a great video of him. Like I don't know if I can say this Greek swear word because I don't actually know what it means.
You know what? It could be a really bad word.
It's the one that starts with an M and ends with an Aka. I don't know how bad it is.
Okay,
but
don't say it.
Anyway, but obviously there's video. There's a great video YouTube on him, like using the word left, right, and center, and blah blah blah. And I'm just wondering, how's his French? Does he even try?
He's trying, I think. Yeah, he's trying. He will get there quickly.
Does it make any sense?
Not yet, but he will get there. Right. I mean, Pancho Abandonado is the guy who's, I think, helping him with the language. There's a couple more people as well, so he will get there. But you saw when, just quickly to finish on that, when Balerdi was sent off, obviously he gave away the free kick that led to the goal. And I think there was maybe someone clearly in the Marseille staff didn't react quickly enough to go and get a sub straight away to replace Balerdi. And Gattuso went absolutely mad, as you can imagine, on the touchline. And then he scored, obviously. Back to Monza, Gab. They received an email last week informing them that Papu Gomez has been banned for 2 years for doping. This is an odd story, though. And he's been ready to go to court because he says, like, he did nothing wrong.
Sorry, so there's two elements to this, right? So he tested positive for something called terbutaline, which I've taken too, because if you take certain allergy medicines or cough syrups, it's in there. So look, the rules on this are very clear. Like, you are responsible for what's in your body. If you take something accidentally and he says he took something from his son's cough syrup, you're still responsible for it. At best, it can be a mitigating factor, right? So it's a bit like the Pogba case, right? If you take it unwittingly, you're still responsible. You still get banned. It's just that you might get banned for less than you would be if the court finds that it's part of some sort of systematic performance enhancing treatment. What's bizarro to me, and what I would really love somebody like some proper investigative journalist to go and explain this to me, he tested positive when he was playing for Sevilla in October 2022.
Before the World Cup.
Yeah, he then went. He played in the World Cup.
Yeah.
He became world champ, played three games in the World Cup. Didn't have a great World Cup, but he was still, he played three games, three of the seven games, part of the thing. played the whole season with Sevilla, was involved in the Europa League final. He was on the bench, I think. And only now, a year later, do they come out and tell him that, oh, look, by the way, you're positive? Like, I don't understand. You have an A sample, you have a B sample.
But and when Monza signed him, did they know that?
No, no, they didn't even, they didn't
but
know.
How can they not know him? That there was some sort of investigation or something?
Sevilla canceled his contract, let him go on a free. Monza signed him, but they didn't know that he had, that he still had this case hanging over him. And this is, I think there's some sort of mystery here. And look, I'm not saying, oh, they should strip Argentina of the World Cup, take it away from Messi or whatever because of freaking Papu Gomez. But I do think that they need to really look at their processes because that it really should be difficult, right? Boom, positive test, A sample, okay. You find this stuff out really, really quickly, right? Within 3 weeks, they should know A sample, B sample, and then you have a hearing. And then CAS if necessary.
Yeah,
but there's no reason this whole thing should extend beyond 6 weeks or 2 months. Not something like this. No, seriously. Imagine if Papu Gomez had scored the winning goal in the World Cup final.
Yeah.
Right? He comes off the bench to make it 4-3 to Argentina against France.
I'd be fuming.
What would
even
you
more.
Be saying now?
I'd be fuming. I would say, like, strip them off.
Exactly.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Despite their Italian manager, Lyon lose at home to Clermont Foot.
Yes, I
won't make the French body part show get this point. Jules. They're winless and bottom of the table. I believe only Sheffield United are worse in the Big Five leagues. Do we have some advice for our pal John Texter, other than inviting him onto the show?
Again?
Maybe before, we'll have lunch together.
Yeah.
We'll share our football wisdom, and he can take it on board if he wants or not.
Not all Italian managers are good right now in France. Certainly not Fabio Grosso.
Yeah, but this guy's a World Cup hero.
Yeah, true, but that was a terrible game. Just nothing going their way. I guess at the end they could have got a point. Maybe they had a couple of good chances right at the end. One especially, but it's just not good enough. As simple as that, it's not good enough. And the worst, I think, in this, and I don't want to keep slagging off John Textor, right?
But for him, he wasn't on the pitch.
He was not on the pitch, but he was at the grounds. He saw that was not even football, especially in the first half. He was terrible from his own team. For him to come out and said, we won't go down, we're too good, our players are too good, the performance today was too good for us to go down. You haven't won a game in 9. You are bottom of the table. You can hardly score. I think they scored 3 goals in 9. This is a terrible team. It has good players like Lacazette, like Tolisso, like Cherki, like many others. But this is not good right now. And I think the sooner he realizes that this is an emergency situation where they all have to do something. And I don't mean just go for a barbecue at Tolisso's house during the international break, because that's not going to sort out everything like they did. The sooner John Textor realizes the situation, the better it will be for his club, because right now he's in a proper denial.
So you don't think it's a case of showing confidence, oh, I always believed in you, blah, blah,
definitely
blah.
Not. They need more than
He seems to have serious communication issues.
Yeah,
this
massively.
Guy.
If that was only the issues that he had. The Greek derby between Olympiacos and Panathinaikos had to be abandoned early this weekend in the second half after
Juancar.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to say that in the UK, but go ahead.
What does that mean?
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Juancar, who was warming up on the sidelines, was hit by fireworks. Gab, his Panathinaikos teammates, refused to start again the game.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, first and foremost, you have to be safe at a football match. If you see one of your teammates being hit by, I mean, people have been seriously injured by fireworks. I am not as anti-pyro as some people would like me to be. But when you're throwing them at footballers, no, that's where even I draw the line.
The fine car just hit me now. I mean,
yeah, sorry. That's the thing. Ajax's free fall continues, Jules. They let a 3-2 lead at Utrecht slip away and lose 4-3. They haven't won since opening day and are second bottom in the Eredivisie. And I'm sure Louis van Gaal's offer to help is
I'm sure. Oh, and Utrecht were bottom of the table before this game. So it's not like if you played PSV and you lose and you say, okay, they're one of the best teams. No, they lost against one of the worst team of the season of the league. They were 2 goals down before coming back and leading 3-2 and then going 4-3 down. You know, it's incredible.
That is a kick in the private parts.
I mean, come on. Surely Stein has to go. There's so many things wrong. And when you think that they still have to play Thursday night in the Europa League, which surely is the last thing they want right now, is on top of this whole crisis and terrible, and the fans obviously, as you would expect, not happy at all. They have to go and play in the Europa League against Brighton. I mean, it's just like, wow.
I'd love it. I'd love it if Ajax got relegated and won the Europa League and next year played in the second division and the Champions League.
They're not going to win the Europa League, and Brighton are going to demolish them as well. Sony, who are partners of Manchester City, have revealed that just 3% of the club's fans will ever set foot in the Etihad. Are you surprised? You have to explain this to me. So they have a lot of fans who live outside of Manchester and the UK, right? Is that what it means?
So I think there's a lot of things going on here. Okay. So first and foremost, yes, these are all global clubs. We know this number for Manchester City. I don't know what it is for Real Madrid. I would assume maybe it's also 3% for Real Madrid. Maybe it's 1%. You know, secondly, it goes into the fact that all these marketing commercial people, they love to use statistics that sound real, but are generally often a whole bunch of bull turds. Because, oh, look, it's like, remember when Manchester United says, we have 857 million fans around the world. I'm like, you sure it's not 858 or 8565 or whatever? This is all nonsense, right?
Yeah.
It does speak to City because obviously City are a club that they have a massive local historic fan base, not a global one. And then they started winning and spending money. And so all these other people with perhaps no connections to Manchester also started supporting the club. So no, it's one of those stupid, out of context, meaningless numbers.
Now, I'm glad you put that quickie there.
No, because you know what? There's a whole bunch of people who are making a living as marketing consultants, as PR people, as people like that, who serve up nothing but garbage. And you know this because I read you. I got an email from one of these people, right?
Yeah, that's true, actually. You
where they describe, I don't say who it is, but they describe a former Premier League footballer, and this is, I won't say who it is, right? But they describe him, I think, as iconic or legendary.
Yeah.
And the quote is, it would be, older players would be crazy if they didn't move to Saudi Arabia for the money. Something like that. And I'm like, really? Really, when I'm 37 at the end of my career and I get one last big fat contract where I can make more money in a year than I did until that point, I'd be crazy. These are the sparkling insights. So it's the same thing. This whole industry, I mean, these marketing, these audience research people, the people who do the ratings, all of that.
Like lawyers, basically.
It's all fluff.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Lawyers are genuinely evil. These people are just deluded, and stupid people are the ones who pay them for this nonsense.
Okay.
Let's talk legendary goal scorers, Jules. Christine Sinclair has announced her retirement from international football.
Oh,
she's
going
to leave. Well, she's 40 years old, and she's allowed to retire.
Great. Amazing.
Now, she's scored a ridiculous 190 goals in 327 games for Canada. Cristiano Ronaldo has 127 goals in 203 appearances.
That's right.
And he says he will decide at the end of the 2024-25 season with Al Nassr if he wants to retire or continue.
Okay.
He has a very clear target to aim for, 63 goals.
Yes, it's not going to happen, I tell you that. It's never going to beat her record. He will improve his, and his might never be beaten.
You put enough distance between him and Messi.
Yeah, Messi, I think, is 107 for Argentina, I think. So he's still, you know, he's quite ahead. But Messi is a bit younger too, let's not forget. Although Messi will probably retire before Cristiano, don't you think so?
I have a feeling.
Yeah, so we will see. But I don't even want to talk about Cristiano. I would rather celebrate the career and everything that Christine Sinclair has done for women's football, for football in general. She's been an incredible ambassador, a brilliant player, of course, and all the things she won for Canada. obviously, especially at the Olympics, was wonderful. So we will miss her, that's for sure. We end on a sad note, Gabby, of course, because Manchester United legend Sir Bobby Charlton passed away aged 86 on Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, Bobby Charlton, I think a lot of people would say that if he wasn't maybe England's greatest ever player, and, you know, I don't want old-timers to pull out Tom Finney and Stanley Matthews and have those endless debates. I think he was undoubtedly maybe the greatest ever goal scorer. Again, maybe not in terms of sheer numbers,
yeah,
but the importance of goals. You know, he held the record for England for many, many years, yep, until Wayne Rooney broke it. And, you know, when you think about him, he ties so much into the romanticism of that era of English football. He's from the northeast of England, near Newcastle. He's related to Jackie Milburn. He's, yeah, sort of like this sort of Newcastle. Like, I don't even know if he was a real person or if he's just like a legend or a myth. You know, he's kind of Shearer before Shearer. He had a brother who also played football, Jack Charlton, who I think had the most appearances ever for Leeds. He ended up with the most appearances ever for Manchester United. Kind of moves to United, breaks into the first team, is part of that tragic Munich air crash, gets injured there, and then comes back and rebuilds the Busby Babes, obviously part of that 1968 European Cup winning side, the first, yeah, English team to win a European Cup, where he played with George Best and Dennis Law. Three Ballon d'Ors on the pitch. Just a huge figure. And if you go on YouTube today and you know, sometimes you watch football from the past, and you can see the way he strikes the ball. You see his technique.
Those goals,
They're very current today. I mean, it looks like it's stuff you could be. The one thing it doesn't look today is his haircut, because I don't think anybody would do that today.
Yeah.
But it's a remarkable figure. Later went on, was a longtime board member and an ambassador for Manchester United. Never really took to management. Supposedly had a hand in taking Sir Alex to United and then backing him when he was there, especially tough, in the early years when he was under. When he was under pressure. So I think undoubtedly a giant of the game.
For sure.
Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday. You know why?
The
Champions. That's right. We're going to be back Thursday. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.